We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome into the RotoWire NFL podcast brought to you by our friends over at WinBet. I am your host, John McKechnie, joined as always by Mario Puig. Mario, I am back in the saddle after having to miss last week due to some water-related nonsense going on at my apartment. It has since been desogified, dehumidified, however you want to put it. So we're good. I'm not even there right now, which is okay as well, but yeah.
No, I was going to ask, did you flee because of it? Is that why you're in Maryland now?
I was tempted. I'm up here for a friend's wedding this weekend. Shout out my guy Will. But yeah, spent the whole like Thursday, Friday, Saturday just kind of dealing with that. But things are okay now, and the apartment's no longer underwater. So we're living right.
That's pretty cool. Do you like it without the water as much?
I mean, the water did add a certain funk to the place, you know, which you got to appreciate and respect. But at the same time, you know, that's
probably more fertile too.
Yeah. But at a certain point, it overstays its welcome, and you know, it becomes a whole thing. It starts, you know, eating your cereal when you don't want it to, and it doesn't ask, or you know, starts taking your beer. So it's just, you know, it's a whole thing. So I'm glad that it's gone. It was just a brief visitor. But anyway. Anything eventful going on in your world before we jump in on today's episode?
Mostly just complaining about how hot it is. And I don't know. I'm trying not to see anything about the preseason results-wise. Like, I know we have to talk about it, but I'm trying to avoid the Twitter, I guess, especially. Like, I guess I can't go on Twitter whenever these games are happening because we're going to have people tweeting things that just kill me, basically, and I'm trying to avoid that more than anything else.
Yeah, Twitter, a lot of the time it tends to be at its worst when there are standalone games that everyone is watching, so everyone is throwing darts at the same exact thing, and it gets even crazier when it's something as non-actionable as preseason. You know, like during the Hall of Fame game last week, the takes are flying, and you're just like, why? But
yeah, I'm not a Najee Harris guy, and I don't want to be online when people are saying, is he bad now? He has, you know, only 15 yards on 10 preseason carries. Is he bad now? Like, that will kill me too.
See, exactly. So, important to keep a level head, and maybe the best way of going about that is logging off during some of these preseason games and just kind of enjoying them and keeping your comments to the walls in your house, that type of thing. But let's go ahead. We got a lot to get to on today's show, of course. Obviously, preseason week one really gets into the swing of things this week. We got a couple games tonight, a handful of games tomorrow night, and then all the way through Saturday and Sunday as well. So a lot of preseason action over these next 4 days. We got a lot of news and notes coming out of training camp. We'll actually kick off there. And then also, Mario did his Beat Mario Puig NFFC draft last week, so we'll dive into that. It's a good looking roster. It's a very Mario looking roster, so we will have to examine further. But let's kick things off What's going on with Dak Prescott, Mario? The Cowboys send out a tweet that I can only imagine their social media manager, as he clicked send on it last night, was just pouring sweat. You know, it's like, this isn't, we're not worried, we're not scared, this isn't a setback, but yeah, he's getting another MRI, by the way.
Maybe he was sweating nervously. Maybe he was chuckling. Maybe he knew there wasn't really as much panic warranted as he knew what come from this tweet, because I'm taking the kind of, I guess maybe this is baseless, but I'm taking kind of like just an optimistic default view of it, because I don't know why they would tweet that if there was actual bad news. It would seem kind of flippant and in poor it would be in poor taste. It would be kind of glib, that's the word that I'm looking for. It would have been glib to be like in charge of the Dallas Cowboys Twitter account, and Jerry, I guess for some reason, is calling you, guy who manages the Dallas Cowboys Twitter account, and saying, oh no, Dak's shoulder is broke actually, but don't tell anyone that. Tell them only about the MRI and tell them that it's all fine. Like, that seems weird to me. So I guess I'm hoping / assuming that this is just kind of like a pre-scheduled MRI, and they're going in to see if it's like getting better, hopefully. I'm hoping it's more of something of that nature, of course. But I mean, I guess in the meantime, I know as little as everybody else, but if it were a bad or like even vaguely concerning situation, that tweet kind of seems insane to let out.
Yeah, no, I think you have it right there. And you know, with Jerry Jones, when you put salt on your McGriddles, it can make you act all funny. So, you know, who knows what to say on the matter exactly. But, yeah, I mean, I'm not pressing the panic button on Prescott right now yet. I'm still taking him where he's going in drafts. Maybe I would push, you know, your Lamars or your Kylers ahead of him in that, you know, kind of three-guy tier. But I still think that by the time that week one rolls around, Dak's going to be good to go. The ankle, I think, is, you know, it's really a positive sign that that's not been really an issue at all since training camp started. So, you know, this could just be some typical arm soreness. You know, you ramp up your quarterback threat, you know, your throwing activity, and things can just get sore really quickly. I mean, that definitely happens. So here's hoping for the best on that. But yeah, I'm going to lean on the side of optimism when it comes to Dak, for better or for worse, at least right now. And he's hoping to play in the next preseason game. That's the latest note that we have on him over at RotoWire. Let's get on to the next news. So rookie first rounder Rashad Bateman goes down with an injury the other day. Coach John Harbaugh says it's going to be an injury that keeps him out for weeks. And then it comes out Thursday morning from the Ravens beat reporters that indeed he will need surgery, be out till September is the word coming out of Baltimore. So how does this impact you as far as your shares of Rashad Bateman? Are you going to continue to go after him in drafts? Do you expect a significant drop in his ADP? And you know, what does this mean for the Ravens offense? Because I feel like he was going to be a pretty important piece, at least to get things rolling. You know, you have Sammy Watkins, you have Marquise Brown has been banged up in his own right a bit this preseason as well. So I feel like there's some risk here with this Ravens offense starting the year a little bit clunky, a little bit slow.
I suppose so. I guess as a result of being higher than most people on not just Marquise Brown, but also Sammy Watkins, of course, and Devin Duvernay, and probably even guys like Tylan Wallace. Maybe even Mark Andrews. Like, I think sometimes Mark Andrews gets a little less respect than he should. So I think it is a bit of a loss. Like, they're going to have a few less bullets in the clip, but I think it's still enough around there, and they have enough to lean on in the run game in the meantime that I just don't think it'll matter. It certainly won't matter for me in terms of like how I'm projecting the rest of the offense. And that includes, like, I'm not raising Marquise Brown or Sammy Watkins. Like, I think those three guys, Rashad Bateman, Sammy Watkins, Marquise Brown, were largely going to coexist anyway. So I don't really see it as, like, Rashad Bateman missing means that Watkins does more or Brown does more. I guess they could, but I think Devin Duvernay is good enough, and if need be, Tylan Wallace. They should be able to kind of keep the offense as designed moving along. And Lamar, of course, does so much with his legs that this could just be a big who care in like a couple weeks of Lamar running three or four more times than usual. That probably doesn't matter. And yet it's something that they could easily pull off. So I think the Ravens offense is in a really good place. I wish, you know, they had a different offensive coordinator. I wish they had Brian Daboll as the offensive coordinator, not Greg Roman. But I'm not going to, like, fret over this too much for the overall team health. For Bateman specifically, it's definitely disappointing. But I wonder, did anyone say whether this was, like, actually a groin injury or if it was more like a sports hernia? Because if it's a sports hernia, he might be back as soon as, like, week three. And back to, like, totally full speed maybe by, I don't know, week four or five. So I just think this could be one of those events that we do not remember a year from now. Like, we look back and think, like, hey, the Ravens had a pretty good year. Rashad Bateman's good. We knew that. Nothing surprising there. This all went pretty good. I don't know if anyone will really remember about how, you know, Bateman had that surgery in August for a sports hernia or groin or whatever, and that ruined his season. Like, that would be pretty surprising to me.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll have to monitor and you know, Ravens people always remember a receiver, first rounder, getting an injury, having it downplayed, and then, you know, the Rashad Perriman scar tissue still exists.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say, like, Mark Clayton or something. And I was like,
Mark Clayton ended up being okay. He was fine. He wasn't as bad as people say. Travis Taylor was pretty bad, though.
Oh, Travis Taylor, 2000 era. Yeah. He was terrible.
Yeah, you get things started with Jamal Lewis, and then you just go ahead and flub it with the Travis Taylor selection. Oh, well. And then one last comment I'll make, because I follow them fairly closely, of course. Maybe this means more for your preseason DFS lineups, but it seems like James Prochet has played his way onto the roster. He has basically played Miles Boykin off the roster from basically everything that I've seen.
So, that's pretty hard to do because they play totally different positions, too.
Yeah, but you can only carry so many receivers, and obviously...
I would cut Boykin first, yeah. Yeah. I would go with Prochet.
So, I mean, Prochet, probably just a slot guy, but, you know, just
he can
keep
catch
an eye on him. He'll be he can. He's got big mitts and reliable hands. I'll keep an eye on his role for this weekend. But yeah,
he can't be worse than Snead. Basically, like he can do whatever Snead would have done.
See,
at the very worst,
that had some utility as minimal as it was. Let's get on over to another rookie. This coming out just earlier Thursday, Elijah Moore, the rookie out of Ole Miss, playing, of course, for the New York Jets, getting an MRI on his quad, early exit from Thursday's practice, apparently. That's not great, but again, we're not really going to know anything until the results of that are released. We don't know if it's a precautionary MRI. I don't even know how precautionary an MRI can be. There's obviously got to be something in order to get one of those things rolling, but either way, I feel like he's kind of the key to that receiving core. We've heard bad things about Denzel Mims basically all August, so I feel like there's going to be a lot on Moore's shoulders, and an injury to him could really be catastrophic.
Yeah, in a case like this, I guess to me it just matters like what the actual diagnosis is, because if he's going to miss time in the regular season, then that's the problem. Like, I don't worry so much about Moore getting ready or getting acclimated. Like, I think there will be a role for a player as talented as him and as for a team as invested in him as the Jets are. So I'm not really worried about him getting back and, you know, a few days before the season starts, but not really playing until October. Like, that shouldn't be an issue. If he's physically able to play, he should be able to just jump in and go. So I'm kind of an optimist from that angle, I guess. But I guess the quad thing is a little more concerning to me than the Bateman thing in the meantime, just because the worst case hasn't been ruled out. But yeah, like, I'm not trying to make the sports hernia kind of thing sound easy or whatever, but we more or less know it's like a 6 week kind of thing. And quad, it's just something that I know less about, or I don't remember. Rather, I know nothing about either one. I just remember fewer cases of quad injuries, so I don't have that easy like recollection of this guy had that happen and it was okay. So I guess I'm going to be kind of anxious waiting for the diagnosis, the prognosis. But if Moore is able to just kind of get into practice by Thursday before week one, I think he'll be whatever he was before the injury too.
Okay. All right. That's pretty much reassuring. So yeah, this is something that could be a problem, but if it is, we'll know a little bit later on down the road. Some interesting news coming out of Indianapolis this week with Carson Wentz, of course, going down with that foot injury that required surgery just a week or so ago, back on August 2nd. But there's reports that he could be available for that season opener for Indianapolis. So one, are you buying it? And two, you know, how are you just overall reacting to this news?
Yeah, I don't care, I guess. I think it would almost more likely be bad for Carson Wentz to try to play week one than a benefit. So it sounds like Quentin Nelson and Carson Wentz are dealing with more or less the same thing, or I would assume.
Right, the contagious foot injury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I assume that's what it is and why they got the same 5 to 12 weeks or whatever the stupid prognosis was. In Nelson's case, though, I can more easily see it being on the shorter end, A, because he's a psycho, B, because offensive line is easier than playing, or offensive line has kind of more prescribed set of motions, I would say, than quarterback, because it's like, it's still, you know, of course, bruising, rigorous stuff. I don't mean to make it sound like it's easier, but you can kind of just tape up a really bruised, beaten up ankle to the point that it doesn't bend very much, and then the pain doesn't really show up anymore, and you almost forget that it's hurt. And as long as you don't have to do any motions where you do bend it in a way that it hurts, or if taping it up doesn't stop you from making a motion that you would otherwise need to make, then you might be able to kind of just get by with it. And Nelson, being a crazy guy who's as intense as he is, you know, he's going to be preparing like a madman. You know, like he is an actual madman on the field and off. So he'll be really psychotically working toward that outcome. But in Wentz's case, it's not so much like he can just, you know, squat out of his stance, set his feet, punch a guy, try to shuffle left and right neatly, and, you know, hopefully the ankle won't matter. Like with Wentz, the ankle will matter. If he wants to throw the ball, it's going to matter. If he wants to do a more than like a 2-step drop, it's going to matter. And he's not going to be able to lean left to right looking around the field if that ankle isn't giving him support. So I'm kind of at once skeptical that Wentz gets the shorter end of this prognosis. Like, unless the prognosis was just stupid long, like if it always was just going to be like a 7 or 8 week thing rather than potentially a 12, then I just can't really see Wentz getting back as fast as Nelson. And if he does, it's not going to be a benefit. Like he's bad to begin with. And then you're going to give him a bum leg too. It's like, I would guess Jacob Eason is probably better than whatever Carson Wentz is on one and a half legs, maybe even Ellinger. And I really don't understand why he was drafted. So I don't care. To me, the Colts are looking point blank at a scenario where they feed Taylor or they forfeit. So Wentz being there back early, I think it's still that same scenario. It's not like they're going to open up the offense like, oh, Carson's back and he's so great. It's okay that he only has one foot this time. He's just that good. It's like, no, and that's not how it works.
No, it's really not. So, yeah, I have not been optimistic about the Wentz in Indianapolis experiment since it came to fruition back in February or whatever it was. And I'm definitely not optimistic about it now. I think rushing it back, like you said, could only, you know, make things worse potentially. So that is a tough scene there in Indy potentially. Let's move on over. Let's get into some preseason discussion. But before then, a quick word from our sponsors.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error. Get the Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, let's get things rolling. So obviously this is the first full week of preseason action, so the first time that we get to see a lot of these high profile rookies and other guys finally take the field in you know what kind of looks like a real football game for the most part. So I want to start things out for you with Justin Fields, obviously the rookie out of Ohio State, going to play potentially into the fourth quarter of Saturday's preseason game against Miami. So Dalton expected to start there, but it sounds like Fields could get upwards of, you know, half of the game worth of playing time. So what are you looking for? What are you expecting out of Fields in this one?
I think he should do well. I guess it's hard to know. Good quarterbacks have done poorly as rookies in the preseason in the past and then done well in the regular season. I guess the most glaring case of that, well, Kyler Murray, I guess, was a recent one. I remember that's why I can't be on Twitter when these stupid games are happening. Because, like, when Kyler Murray had his first game, there are all these people, because he got sacked a bunch and everything just looks stupid with the Cardinals offense. And people are like, oh, look at how short he is. I knew this would happen. And those people didn't have to pay a price for spewing all that garbage. You know, they just,
nope.
They're still tweeting. They still have their followers from back when they said that noxious crap. So, I can't watch because Kyler Murray struggled as a preseason rookie quarterback. Cam Newton had one of the most legendarily bad preseasons of all time, his rookie year. And then he set the rookie passing record in week one against the Packers or it wasn't against the
Cardinals.
Packers, it was against Cardinals. Yeah, yeah. Sorry. We had it. It was on the Wisconsin cable. So I assumed it must've been, Packers, but yeah, it was Cardinals. Justin Fields could have a totally good regular season, even if he bombs in this game. So there's only stakes to it in the sense that if Fields does struggle, then you would imagine the Bears are that much more resolute in saying, yeah, Dalton's our starting quarterback, not just for week one, maybe the whole year. And I think the way this is going to play out is, even regardless of how Fields does in the preseason, I think Dalton is going to start week one, largely because they, maybe for good reason, just want to keep Fields away from, is it the Rams that they play in week one? It's some kind of tough defense.
So.
Yeah, it's some kind of tough defense. And I think Fields is a good prospect, and I'm not particularly close to as high on him as his biggest fans are. Like, I think there are some concerns with him, and I think I would be a little worried about him going against the Rams. So as someone who's already drafted Fields on a few best ball teams, I'm okay with him sitting week one, especially if it preserves his confidence and doesn't mess up his rhythm in his development. But the more that he shows good in a game like this, the more pressure is going to build on the Bears to get Fields in the lineup. And
right.
I think that if you're a Fields investor, you take it as a good sign that they're saying they're going to play him all game, because it doesn't mean that he's going to do well, and it doesn't mean that he's going to build pressure on the Bears to get on the field. But if Nagy is willing to leave Fields on, God, I got to think of some other word, the dang gridiron for four quarters, John, then it means that Nagy is okay with the possibility that Fields looks great, much better than Dalton, thus forcing him to put Fields into the starting lineup. I think if they were resolved to, like, not giving Fields a chance, I don't know why they would set this up for themselves to get pressured into having to put him on the field. So I think it's a good sign for him. I would sooner guess he does well than poorly, but it's hard to know because preseason does not matter. People will tell you otherwise. They're wrong. It doesn't matter.
Okay. I mean, yeah, when it comes to Fields getting that longer look tonight, yeah, that I feel like if you are one of the Fields optimists, and I count myself among them, maybe not to the most extreme end, but nonetheless, you know, the more chances he gets out there, especially in a preseason game where the Dolphins are going to be playing some sort of just shell of a defense with nothing complicated going on, really, you know, I think that's a setup where he can really shine. So I feel like he can start putting that pressure on the Bears and on the front office. Whether again it has any week one impact, Vegas doesn't seem to think so. I think when I looked at the board on that specific prop back in July, Dalton was like -300 to start week one. So I mean,
I think it's week two. I think it's week two that Fields gets out there, and I can almost understand it. You know, like they're probably not winning that game. They're definitely not competing this year with Dalton. So like, what's the difference in losing one game to start the year in a 17 game season that you probably weren't competing anyway, especially if you can spare Fields the exposure to Aaron Donald for that crap offensive line that they have. So, but yeah, Dalton sucks, man. I had to write about, you know, the quarterback battles the other day, and I was thinking earlier this offseason, like, Dalton might be okay. He might be kind of like a Band-Aid, a soggy Band-Aid that somehow stays on even though you're, you know, in the rain or whatever. But he sucks. He's always sucked. Even in his good years, he was not good. It was just A.J. Green doing Herculean efforts to lift him up. And then once A.J. Green left, even on that Dallas offense last year, Dalton still sucked. So I think the Bears are basically kidding themselves that they think they can hide Fields forever.
Yep. And, you know, they wouldn't have taken – it wouldn't make sense to take him where they did.
Signed Dalton only – or maybe we don't know only because – but they didn't expect Fields to be there. They didn't expect Fields to be an option. So they were like, I guess we got to sign Dalton. But it turned out they didn't.
And they had the famous picture of Andy Dalton in the Bears jersey, QB1. That's one of the best posts from this past year. Let's keep looking around. We got Broncos Vikings coming up this weekend on Saturday. Do you think there's going to be any lessons to learn potentially from that backfield and also the quarterback position when it comes to the Broncos?
I think there could be something to learn at quarterback in the sense that, not that I would, but I can imagine the Broncos coaches caring about how Bridgewater and Locke perform in the preseason. To me, it would just not matter at all. But these guys, especially, man, Fangio's, he's like 70 or something. He might be kind of like that old school way of like preseason counts and, you know, you got to do well in the preseason. I don't want to speak for Vic. He might not believe that at all, but I don't think that they're just going to go with one of the two quarterbacks if that quarterback did much worse in the preseason than the other. So as someone who's kind of a Bridgewater optimist and also slightly invested, like I think I have literally one best ball team with Teddy Bridgewater at quarterback. I hope he wins. And if he does poorly, I'm going to be a little concerned that my whole calculus was wrong. But yeah, I'm interested in the Denver quarterback situation. I don't want to rule out Locke becoming decent, but I have no faith in the meantime. He's been just rough so far. He's had no good moments, and he really just doesn't seem more than just like a kind of toolsy guy who just really isn't a natural quarterback. So
the poor man's Jeff George.
Yeah, something like that. Much cooler than Jeff George. That's the one thing about Drew that's tough. It's like he doesn't seem so bad, so it's hard to, you know, you definitely don't hope he does poorly. But I do hope that he does poorly if Teddy Bridgewater does poorly, because I want Drew Locke to not be the starter this year. But anyway, the backfield, I doubt you'll learn anything about like Melvin Gordon versus Javonte Williams. I know, God, Javonte Hive, they probably called into work if they had work. They're probably like they have like a gender reveal type thing built, but it's not revealing anything. It's just going to be the color blue, like for North Carolina, or it's going to be like a big monument to Javonte underneath after you explode the exterior of it over several nearby miles. I don't know.
Wildfire by accident.
Yeah. That would be the
That has happened. Yeah. Gender reveals are dangerous.
Oh God. Yeah. You can't merely tell someone the gender of your child. You have to make a nuclear bomb in a brush fire prone area. but anyway, I think, I guess a guy like Mike Boone might be able to kind of like muddy up that picture if he runs really well. Like maybe he can make it a three-headed monster kind of deal if he does great. But I guess I'm kind of interested to see what they do with Royce Freeman because he's listed fourth on the depth chart. And even before they did any OTAs, Vic Fangio had Mike Boone signed and then said, we have three running backs on this team, Melvin Gordon, Javonte Williams, and Mike Boone. So we'll see. It sure seems like they're not planning to keep Freeman. And I guess the Rams might not trade for anyone. I guess the Falcons might be done making moves at running back after signing Deontay Foreman. But I sure think they have reason to put Royce Freeman on display to try to trade him. Or maybe he can even work his way back onto the team. I don't know. But there's something, I guess, to watch for the deeper part of that Denver bench. Although I think Gordon and Javonte are just going to kind of like split things initially, I would imagine.
Okay. All right. That definitely checks out. So, yeah, I think the that audition angle where the Broncos can, if they're really not planning on hanging on to Royce, get him out there, let him beat up on some third string defenders late in that game, put some highlight tape out there and, you know, ship him off to, you know, somebody for conditional or whatever he would be worth at this stage. Let's get on over to Jacksonville because there's a lot of teams where we're not going to learn much of anything this weekend, but the Jags, I mean, maybe we won't with them, but it's going to be entertaining nonetheless because we don't know anything really. I mean, they're talking about the open quarterback competition. We know that that's obviously not true.
No, John, I think you should take very seriously the reports that Gardner Minshew might start over Trevor Lawrence. And the people who tell you that it's a real competition, you should take them seriously later on, too. But, yeah, it's going to be pretty funny watching Urban Meyer go however long he does, pretending like, actually, we might not be starting Trevor Lawrence. It's not settled yet.
I think I saw some discourse on Twitter earlier that about Minshew over Wentz in Indianapolis, and they should trade Minshew there. And say,
sure,
it honestly could be worse, man.
Why not?
But as far as like this offense, do you think we're going to learn anything about stuff like their tempo, their formations, anything like that?
I don't think they're going to have a lot of tempo. I don't think they're going to be like above average, maybe not below average, but I wouldn't expect to see an up-tempo preseason showing from the Jags, if only because I don't really expect to see it from them at any point. I could be wrong. I hope they go up-tempo. That'd be cool. I think, Chip Kelly was definitely onto something with that. And you see the Rams do that. You see the 49ers, situationally at least. The Patriots have been doing it for like 3 or 4 years now, going very up-tempo. I would like to see that. Not going to get my hopes up exactly. But the formations, I think we already know. I mean, it's going to be just kind of like a more spaced out Bavel kind of offense. And I think, beyond just like seeing how some of these guys look on an NFL field, there probably won't, in that being just entertainment value rather than informational. But beyond that, I don't really expect to see anything here. Even if they start Carlos Hyde or something stupid like that, or start Gardner Minshew, it just doesn't matter. There's not going to be anything to take away. We pretty much know what the Jaguars' depth chart is. Yes, Trevor Lawrence is going to start at quarterback. James Robinson and Travis Etienne are the top two. Carlos Hyde's going to be the third running back. The receivers are going to be, I don't want to jinx Colin Johnson. He's been doing really well. And I was worried about Urban Meyer being goofy toward him. Like, oh, he's too slow. He's not fast enough. He's not Dontre Wilson. Get me Dontre Wilson in here. But it seems like it seems like Colin Johnson's doing a good job. And it seems like Meyer's kind of warming up to him. So he seems like the fourth receiver. The fifth receiver is going to be Laquan Treadwell of all people. And the sixth receiver is going to be Agnew. So I don't don't think there's really much left to settle for their top six receivers. I guess it's down to like Dorsett versus Jalen Camp and Josh Immature Baby for the sixth or seventh receiver spot if they have one. So we'll see. But yeah, the don't care clause definitely in effect here. I don't care if Trevor Lawrence looks rough or if Travis Etienne only has 6 yards on three carries. But I bet they'll both look pretty good.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. You know, it, as much as one can look forward to a preseason game, of course.
If I look forward to one, that's the only one. Just because I think Lawrence is going to blow people's minds this year, basically. And I think NFL people who don't watch college football don't really have, like, a frame of reference to understand him. And when they actually see him in motion, they're going to kind of just be like, huh, you don't see that every day.
Yeah, he's so different. It's just absolutely absurd. So I was kicking myself. I was doing an underdog best ball the other day, and I was looking for my second quarterback, or I was in a spot where I should have been taking one, and I, for whatever reason, just took another running back or something like that because my running backs were thin, and I was like, oh no, I just missed on Trey Lance. Like, I just absolutely screwed myself. But then Trevor Lawrence was still around the next round. I'm like, I don't know how this worked out, but okay.
People are low on Trevor Lawrence, and I kind of understand it, but I more so really don't understand it. Like,
yeah, I'm going to go ahead take a no on that. Yeah.
Yeah, I like Lance too. He's kind of worth reaching for just because his market's a little higher and that rushing upside is insane. But Trevor's going to be a 17 game, you know, health permitting. But he's a week one. It's go time right away with Trevor Lawrence.
Absolutely. And again, just a ridiculous talent. Before we finish out some preseason discussion and move on over to Mario's NFFC team, we've got some words from our sponsors. Leading us off here, we got our friends over at WinBet. If there's one thing we appreciate here at RotoWire, it's making good decisions, and even more so, making the right decision. Listen up, folks. I have an incredible offer for you with RotoWire's newest partner, WinBet, the premier digital casino and sportsbook app. WinBet is now the exclusive partner for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. WinBet brings you all the latest action with a user-friendly interface, moneyline bets, boosted parlays, over-unders, round robins, live betting, and so much more at your fingertips. And if you want a break from sports betting, head into WinBet's digital casino and take a spin on roulette, double down in blackjack, slam the slots, or try your hand at baccarat. WinBet is currently available in 6 states, that's Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia, while rapidly expanding. At WinBet, the possibilities are limitless. WinBet is currently offering all RotoWire listeners a risk-free bet up to $500 on your first wager. Download WinBet right now. That's WYNNBET. WinBet, the exclusive partner for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. We also get a message from our friends over at Dynasty Owner. Are you tired of the same old fantasy football leagues that get canceled year after year? If so, Dynasty Owner has your back. Go to DynastyOwner.com. New leagues for the 2021 season are forming right now. Dynasty Owner unites the fun and excitement of fantasy football with the skill and strategy of the front office by incorporating a salary cap and real NFL player salaries for diehard fantasy football fans that want the real GM experience. Dynasty Owner adds a whole new level of strategy. Are you worried you won't be able to find anyone to play in your league? Don't worry. Dynasty Owner can help fill your league with fantasy football enthusiasts just like yourself. You won't have to worry about finding enough players. You can choose to start a league, join an existing, or purchase a team from a previous owner. If you're serious about joining the big leagues, go to DynastyOwner.com/RotoWire. That's DynastyOwner.com/RotoWire and start your dynasty today. We also have our friends over at AutoNew. AutoNew Fantasy Football lets you build your fantasy football dynasty like a real GM. It's better fantasy football, auction-based, deep rosters, and college player prospects. Stash the next rookie of the year while he's still tearing it up on Saturdays. Trade for superstars to make a championship push. Develop a team over multiple years. Play against the best fantasy football competition on the internet. Visit OTTONEU.com to play today. All right, Mario, any other parting shots here? Anything else that you're looking for in particular when it comes to preseason week one?
I guess I'm looking forward to seeing Kylan Hill in Green Bay. Maybe he'll get a little shot to show something. saw he's doing well in practice, which is exactly what I would expect. Yeah, I'd really like to see him do well and make some bad people angry.
Yeah, we are Kylin Hill guys for sure. So, you know, it's crazy that how far he fell in the draft. But, yeah, really talented guy. So I think that he could definitely, you know, make some waves in the second half of that Packers opener against the Texans. But yeah, otherwise, I think that should pretty much round it out as far as our preseason discussion is concerned. I'm excited to see Kyle Pitts out there. I believe that.
Oh yeah,
I believe that.
That's a Trevor Lawrence kind of thing too. Yeah. Where when people see it, they're just like, "Oh, I get it. Never mind. I'm sorry. I was skeptical."
let me go back and search my Twitter handle and then and Kyle Pitts and delete everything. Okay, let's get on over. So you had your RotoWire Online Championship, the Beat Mario Puig RotoWire Online Championship last Friday. Is a 12-teamer. Give the listeners a bit of background on this draft, where you were picking, the scoring format, all that good stuff, and then we'll dive into your roster.
Yeah, so when I was on the radio with Jim that day, I was kind of – or Joe, rather, sorry. I was – you know, talking a lot of trash about Jonathan Taylor and maybe DeAndre Swift. I can't remember, but I basically was talking about how, look, I'm going to try to get late first round pick. I'm probably going to take Jonathan Taylor. I'm probably going to target Calvin Ridley and DeAndre Swift, and we'll see if I can get them. Hopefully that, you know, the people in the league don't snipe me or whatever. And maybe it won't, in hindsight, have been good luck, but I was able to get those three guys. I, in the meantime, think that was somewhat fortunate. I know Jonathan Taylor isn't going ninth overall in a lot of leagues, and oftentimes he'll fall into the mid or late second. I am just eager to fade those sentiments.
Fade the faders.
Yeah, I want to short that as aggressively as I can. I just think that it's nonsense. I think there's a lot of ideological trash that's invading like the broader narrative, the broader discourse around such these as questions. Well, it starts with like the running backs don't matter thing. I think that an obvious foreseeable result of the running backs don't matter thing is that you start being incurious toward what running backs are and you stop noticing differences between them. I mean, why would you care? They don't matter. Do you try to make yourself an expert on things that you think don't matter? I mean, I probably do because I'm a compulsive idiot, but I don't mean to. And so I think people are getting desensitized to meaningful differences between running back talent specifically. And I think Jonathan Taylor is clearly one of the five best running backs in the league. And this is pretty similar reasoning to what I used with Nick Chubb last year when I was just so irritated with the people that were saying, like, Kareem Hunt might be better even, actually. So as three rounds cheaper, it's a no-brainer. You go with the guy who might even be better and definitely is cheaper. Like, he is not maybe better. He is definitely not better. If you still want to take him instead and that's what you believe, then fine. But that wasn't what they said. They were always like, oh, he might be better. They're going to act like it's a hindsight issue as to what the obvious outcome of that was no, Nick Chubb is clearly better. And people are going to try to make that like, oh, that's a hindsight thing. No one could have known. You could have known. You just had to care enough to look in the first place at who these two players were. And I think the Jonathan Taylor ADP slipping into the second round, which, by the way, happened after, and I don't know why it didn't happen sooner. Maybe it's like baseball guys, high dollar DFS type people were distracted with something else until then. I don't know. But like about a month ago, and especially about 2 or 3 weeks ago on Underdog, the zero running back people just started raiding, like an entire horde of these people showed up, and they weren't there before earlier in the offseason. And so I am absolutely considering their presence as part of the calculus of why Jonathan Taylor's market deflated, because these people started spending their capital at receiver and among the running backs, they probably cared more about, you know, pass catching type guys more than Taylor, who, by the way, is going to catch passes this year. But anyway, I talked all that trash. And so I the ninth pick, I did think about going with Aaron Jones because I love Aaron Jones, too. He's a beast. But because I was on the radio talking that way, I was like, well, that'd kind of be like underhanded if I use this opportunity to diversify my running back investments when I basically told everyone I was taking Taylor. So I did. I do wish I could get like another NFFC team where I could get Jones at that same pick just because I like them both a lot there. But I went with Taylor. And I'm not worried about it. I actually pulled up some clips of him yesterday because I, for a second, for the briefest of moments, I was like, man, maybe I am too high on Jonathan Taylor. And then when I started watching him again, I was like, oh, no, I'm not. And just, you know, it took not even like 30 seconds of the clip. I was like, this guy's a top five running back. Get out of here with this crap, this ideology that like, oh, all running backs are the same. It's like, no, man, all you people are the same. This new paradigm of people who just have like the utmost faith in like algorithms and things to the point that they become disinterested in physical reality. It's irritating to me, and I want to make them pay if possible.
I love everything you just said. Absolutely. Right on. Yeah, take it to them. And so a powerful start there. You went ahead with your next pick. You went and snagged Calvin Ridley. I thought that's a great way to start out. I think, you know, you started things out with three running backs in your first four. And I think that, you know, a lot of the times, like what you're saying about underdog, and this is obviously different. This is NFFC. But at the same time, you know, people will balk at taking running backs early. But as we've kind of discussed throughout the entirety of this offseason, especially when we're in drafts where people are fading running backs early and just kind of volume buying all of the receivers, you kind of just trust your evaluation of what you can get in the mid rounds as far as receivers are concerned, and you went ahead and backed that up as well. I mean, after the fourth round, you got Josh Allen, and then you hit receiver with your five next picks. So I think that, you know, you were able to execute a different plan than a lot of people are than what is trendy right now, and you did it well.
Well, I'm glad you think so. I will say, though, I definitely see the appeal of going wide receiver earlier in NFFC, because part of why I am going with a swarm approach at receiver in best ball is because I think the swarm approach works in best ball specifically. I think it should work. Having a bunch of guys, a high number of players who are pretty good, seems not necessarily better, but similarly useful to me as having like four extremely good ones and then four kind of okay ones. It's like I'm going to have guys every week, I think, that are doing something in best ball, and I don't need to figure out which when. In NFFC, you need to know, because it's redraft. You have to actually make the lineup. And if some guy gets hurt and pulled out of the lineup, you're stuck with their 0 points or whatever. You don't get somebody else plugged in automatically. So I can see the appeal of going, you know, Davante Adams, AJ Brown, or Metcalf or something like that in the first two rounds of NFFC, because like, hey, that's two spots where you don't need to wonder at all what you're doing that week. Like, those guys are always in there. You don't need to worry about matchups. You don't need to worry about them falling out of their target rotation because of some other good player on their team having a good week in their place. That doesn't happen with those kinds of receivers. So I think Ridley is that category of receiver, and that's why I got him in the second round. I would have considered other receivers for the third round pick where I took Swift, and the fourth round where I took Carson, and especially that fourth round where I took Carson. Like, I was surprised at how little was available at receiver at that point. I don't normally target Carson that much. And in this spot, what would that have been? I think that would have been almost the end of the fourth round that I got him. And because NFFC is full point PPR rather than half point PPR, that was another reason that I valued him a little more than I do on underdog, where I don't have more than like a couple shares. So I wasn't expecting to get Carson there, and I wasn't thrilled about the pick, but I think in PPR, he's a really rock solid value outside
Carson a little bit more. I hadn't gotten any of him so far. I've probably done, you know, double digit best ball drafts at this point. I just got my first Carson share in the fifth round of a 10 teamer.
Oh, nice.
On Sunday. And it was a little bit just like curiosity and a little bit just like, if I'm going to make these many drafts, I might as well cover my base at least in one spot. But I mean, just break down your outlook for Carson for this year.
Well, I'm definitely concerned that he's going to get hurt. He's gotten hurt each of the past 5 years, so I don't have any delusions about that. I know he's a very high risk, about as high of a risk of any running back to miss time this year. So that is part of it. However, I think that in games where he is active, he's clearly a good player, and I think that the Seattle offense, some of its ADP, some of its cumulative ADP this year, I think is maybe dragging a bit because of how they finished last year. I think there's some concern that there's like a problem there among some people drafting, or at least like most people are a little tiny bit concerned. And I would say more concerned than they should be, especially when you're talking about the passing game. I mean, Russell Wilson, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett is not going to fail. The reasons that they struggled last year was because they didn't have an adjustment that they could make from their initial loadout, and then defenses adjusted to it. In hindsight, the only adjustment they could have made was just running the ball more like they did to get those defensive looks early in the year that they were able to exploit in the first place. The looks from the defenses changed after they saw they weren't going to run like they used to, and they didn't have enough passing game ammo to kind of counter-adjust to the way that defenses sat on DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. But that, to me, is something that's clearly going to change, especially now that they have a new offensive system entirely. Like, if defenses want to sit on what the Seahawks were doing last year in the passing game, they're going to get burned because there's just totally different concepts in play. Like, the timing, the placement, the spatial qualities are all different. And instead of, you know, sitting on the rhythm that the Seahawks displayed early last year and disrupting all these things that used to work so well, you're just going to be in the wrong place. And DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett are still the receivers, and they're going to burn you. So I think that talent always wins out, or, you know, wins out reliably enough that we can assume that Metcalf, Lockett return to their prior levels, Russell Wilson to their prior levels. And in that case, they're all three underpriced, or at least Lockett and Wilson are probably underpriced. Metcalf, really good value, probably more or less fairly priced. But they're all great, and if they are, then Chris Carson's kind of going along for the ride too. He's going to be in scoring range. He's going to get the carries when this otherwise healthy offense is going to the run. And Carson was doing a lot more as a pass catcher last year than he was the prior 2 years. His rushing efficiency, his rushing volume on a per snap basis definitely decreased, and that's why I'm not quite as high on him in underdog, whereas the half point PPR. But in full point PPR, Chris Carson, you know, in the miraculous scenario that he plays 17 games, he could catch something like 70 passes. Yeah, I was basically talking about how he catches passes quite a bit, and he didn't run last year as much as he did the year before, but NFFC is full point PPR rather than half point like underdog. So that was a bit of a boost in itself. And I was talking about how I think the Seattle offense looks like it's going to be good. To me, it looks like it's going to be good. And if Carson's a three down player in that offense, then, you know, that kind of stuff tends to work itself out.
No, 100%. And I do think that there is a collective penalty, it seems like, on the Seattle offense for the way that they sputtered out late last season. You know, Wilson started out the year with the let Russ cook mantra, and it was working out great. And then, you know, towards the end of the year, he was basically not a QB1 for any of the playoffs or anything like that. So I think there might be some collective scar tissue on Seattle investors that way. But I think that they'll bounce back just fine this year. And Carson can definitely be a big part of, you know, what is a healthy offense. So let's get into the receivers that were aforementioned. You of course got Josh Allen in the fifth round, and then you went Robbie Anderson, DJ Chark, Laviska Shenault, Michael Gallup, Mecole Hardman. So walk us through, you know, were those the specific guys that you were targeting in those particular rounds? Did you want to leave this draft with a Chark Shenault combo? Just go on from there.
I was not pursuing a Chark Shenault combo. I was more so looking to take one of the two, but they both were going so late that I ended up making the picks just because I didn't want other teams to get them. And I was like, well, if I got to put one of them on the bench, then I guess that's fine because, I don't know, maybe one of them will get hurt or something, and then I'll be glad to have the other. But I know I don't want some other jerk in the league getting Laviska Shenault as their wide receiver 3 in like the 9th round or something. So I took them both. I thought they were good players. And obviously guys like Gallup, Mecole Hardman are in this category too. But these are guys who are a little bit better in best ball than they are in redraft, because as much as I like all of them, it's hard to make the correct pick between the four of them every week. And I'm definitely going Calvin Ridley. I have to guess right now pretty much every week between like Robbie Anderson, Chark, Chenault, Mecole, Michael Gallup. And that's not easy to do because these guys are pretty comparable in a lot of ways. And matchups aren't everything. Sometimes good matchups go bad. Sometimes a good player does well in a bad matchup for no real reason. So it's going to be easy for me to end up with bench points at receiver. Like in best ball, this isn't a concern. If they're scoring points, I get them. But in this one, I have to actually make the call ahead of time. So that's a little concerning. But for the value of those players at their picks, I have no qualms at all. In pretty much every one of those cases, I was like, oh God, I hope these other guys don't get this receiver. I hope I took away a target or two of some other teams. I'm glad to have all these guys in the meantime, but yeah, it's going to be a challenge. I'm guessing right, which of the non-Ridley receivers that I have do anything in any given week.
No, absolutely. And that's an interesting distinction that you brought up, like the swarm strategy. And because throughout basically the entire offseason, up until now, up until August when redraft really gets rolling, we just are interested in best ball in the sense of accumulating the best high upside talent and not having to worry about any of that lineup setting. So now we're getting into that stage of draft season, and it can change your valuation. Like you said, these are guys that maybe are like the quote unquote better in best ball types. I'll be interested to see, you know, how you navigate that once the season gets started. But I think at the very least, you have a nice collection of guys from which to choose. My next question for you is figuring out tight end, because I feel like when you go away from, I'd say, the top five tight ends, you know, Kelsey, Waller, Kittle, Pitts, and Andrews, it gets a little bit rocky, and I think that you can justify waiting on tight end for a good while after that, and that's what you did. After you took Mecole, you doubled down, got Tyler Higbee and Jonnu Smith with back-to-back picks. So walk us through what appeals to you about those guys as, you know, potential kind of later round tight end options.
Yeah, so I was hoping to get Kyle Pitts in the fifth round. I was partially so willing to take Carson in the fourth because in past NFFC leagues I've been in, tight end slides quite a bit, I guess Travis Kelce aside. So I was hoping maybe I get Kyle Pitts in my fifth round pick. That'd be pretty sick. Unfortunately, someone took Kyle Pitts, I think, like the next pick after I took Josh Allen, and then someone took Mark Andrews right after that. So there was still – I don't even really – like I was talking earlier about how I like Mark Andrews. I would not have taken him that high. He's less valuable in NFFC than he is in an underdog because he's not even in theory a reception count tight end. He's like a touchdown and yardage tight end. So I think Mark Andrews loses a little bit in this format. I did want Pitts. Took Josh Allen because – yeah, that'll work too. I was considering, I think it was with Robbie Anderson, that I could have taken TJ Hawkinson, and I really thought about it a lot. In hindsight, I might regret passing up Hawkinson for Anderson there. But the reason I went with Anderson was because, unlike even Chark, Chenault, Mecole, and Gallup, Anderson was a reception guy last year. Like he had 95 catches or something like that. So he could be a triple digit catch guy in that round. And if Anderson hadn't been on the board, if I hadn't perceived in Anderson that sort of weekly, reliability, ostensibly anyway, I probably would have took Hawkinson. If I'm not getting Pitts, if I'm not getting Hawkinson, then I'm not going to take like Logan Thomas or probably not Robert Tonyan. I don't know what was going in like that 10th round range, but I took Higbee before Jonnu, even though I'm higher on Jonnu this year, just because I knew I was going to take two tight ends, and I was like, well, I can maybe get Jonnu in the next round. It looks like Higbee's supposed to have been off the ADP already. So I took Higbee, and I like Higbee enough. I mean, I think he's definitely a good player, and I really think there's an under-acknowledged chance he has a big year in the red zone, especially with Matt Stafford at quarterback. So I'm happy to get Higbee, but I think Jonnu's going to pile up catches this year. I think he's going to be really good. So if I miss out on the Pitts and then, you know, the Andrews, Hawkinson tier, I'm definitely not going right in for the Goddard, Thomas, whatever. I'm waiting a little bit. And that's what I was basically doing here is I was just waiting. And I was kind of surprised at how long Higbee went. So I was like, you know, I'm not quite as high on him as Jonnu in PPR, but maybe I can just get them both right here and hopefully one of them pans out a little bit.
Okay, and then let's finish it out here. Walk us through the rest of your draft, the end game strategy, and you know how you feel about your team overall as we wrap things up here.
Yeah, so I took Trevor Lawrence as my quarterback two in the 13th round because I decided he's going too late. I don't want someone else to get him at this price. And that was problematic because he has the same week seven bye as Josh Allen. So I did that knowing I would have to take a third quarterback. And well, I guess I didn't have to. I could have just picked up a quarterback during the season. But I didn't really want to do that, largely because there was just such trash available on the board anyway at this point. Like, I don't know if this happens in every NFFC draft. I guess it can't, because I know I was pulling up the past like 7 days of ADP data, and they were still taking running backs like 3, 4, 5 rounds earlier than ADP. Like, starting in like the 7th or 8th round, that was the case. Like, I'm pretty sure Melvin Gordon went in the 7th round in this draft as one little example. And guys like Rashad Penny going off the board in like the 10th, 11th. So I'm not going to chase those prices. Like, I'm just not going to. And I was like, fine, I'll take Trevor then. And then in the next round, I took Tua Tagovailoa because he's playing the Falcons in week 7. So I was hoping, you know, maybe Tua just turns out to be pretty good. And I'm just not even really all that pissed off about having to hold on to three quarterbacks. Or maybe I can wait till he gets hot, cut him, and let somebody blow their fab on him because they got greedy and thought they could make it this year with Ben Roethlisberger as their first quarterback or something. I don't know, something like that. But I was like, whatever. I know Lawrence is going too late. I'm going to take him. I know I'm not going to start him, but if I can stop somebody else from getting points, that seemed to me more likely than the chance that I'm going to like get a big steal with Gio Bernard in the early 12th round or something like that. So that's the way I went. And I already knew, like, if I have any shot of winning this league in getting into the postseason tournament, I'll need Chris Carson, DeAndre Swift, and Jonathan Taylor to get hot anyway. So I was like, either that works or it doesn't, and I'm screwed. And I don't think that the fallout, I don't think like the resulting complications of failure with those three running backs is going to be fixed by reaching for these garbage players 4 rounds above ADP. So I took 2 quarterbacks. Devontae Booker, to me, who I took after Tua, he's exactly the same tier as a lot of the guys that were going in like the 11th or 12th round. Guys who should just not be going that high, in my opinion. So to get him 4 rounds after those other guys, I thought was, I'm not going to get excited about it, but like in terms of the value, I think it's pretty clearly there. Went with the Ravens special teams. I went with the Ravens defense and kicker, team kicker, both back to back. And then I rounded out the draft just padding some running back names. I don't really even care. I didn't care. But I took Mike Boone and Royce Freeman kind of just to be antagonistic toward the Javonte Hive. And I took Sony Michel in the last round because if Royce Freeman and Jalen Samuels don't get traded to a team like the Rams or the Falcons, I think Sony Michel might. And otherwise, it's like, you know, training camp's still got to go. Preseason still got to go. It makes sense to take a bunch of running backs at the end of your NFFC draft just in case somebody gets hurt somewhere and then you don't have to spend the fab on their backup.
No, absolutely. So I think you're able to round it out correctly and take some of those late round darts as far as the running backs are concerned. We talked about Royce earlier. Maybe he gets auditioned, maybe he gets traded somewhere else. And, you know, Michelle, similar case. We'll have to see how things end up shaking up with him. But that's going to wrap things up for this Thursday edition of the RotoWire NFL podcast, again brought to you by our friends over at WinBet. For Mario Puig, I'm John McKechnie. Enjoy the first round of preseason action tonight and tomorrow and Saturday and Sunday. It's going to be a fun weekend, folks. All right, signing off.
Try RotoWire today, free for 10 days. Get our premium tools, rankings, analysis, and breaking news alerts. No credit card required. Go to rotowire.com/try.